Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and today I'm super excited to be joined by Dr. Kim Lee. Now, I'll introduce Dr. Kim Lee very shortly, but before I do, I just want to ask a small favor. If you could go across to the platform that you're listening to this podcast on, would greatly appreciate if you could leave us a five-star review, because what that does, that helps us reach more people and hopefully have a positive impact on them as well. So if you can, that'd be greatly appreciated. And also, I just want to mention the Wellbeing Wizard tool by Growing with Gratitude. Now, this tool is an AI-powered, world-class assistant to teach wellbeing in schools. So what I mean by assistant is assistant for wellbeing leaders at schools and also teachers that helps create quality lessons. It helps create scope and sequences across the whole school, unit plans. It can create personalized learning programs for particular students if they've got special learning requirements. It can link to different curriculums. It's culturally very good at bringing together the different cultures of your school. It can do multiple languages. And the reason why we've been able to do this, now you can't do this a lot of this on ChatGPT because ChatGPT is so wide and general. This is constrained purely for wellbeing in schools. Really excited for it. We're in testing mode at the moment with teachers and schools. So if you'd like to join that waiting list, it's going to be a game changer for schools and for teachers. There's a link in the show notes for you to join that waiting list to be the first to know when it's available. Now, today's guest, Dr. Kim Lee. Now, Dr. Kim Lee is a child and adolescent psychiatrist. He specializes in gaming addiction. Now, the reason why I wanted to get Dr. Kim on the podcast today, because I'm really intrigued personally by gaming and the impact that it's having on students' learning and their brains. Now, personally, I don't have kids, but my partner does. He's 11, and I'm really interested to see his behavior in terms of when he's gaming and when he's coming off it. And I've seen so many different, I guess, personalities come out, and I find it really interesting. He's the sweetest, nicest boy, but sometimes, particularly when he gets told to come off gaming and there's agreements in place, so my partner does that really well, but he knows his time's up, but he'll just sometimes lose it. I'm just really fascinated by what happens in the young person's brain, and not just young people, like this is a problem for adults as well. So there's no better person to talk about this than Dr. Kim Lee. Now, during the episode, we talk about a whole lot of different things. We talk about some strategies that parents can use at home. There's a couple of documentaries that Dr. Kim mentions, and we put them in the show notes. And also, we talk about some of those things that are happening in the brain. And it's really interesting. But what I really love about this is there's some strategies that you can use in the classroom or at home with your own kids. And it's definitely worth a listen, because and screen time, obviously it's a hot topic in society, and there's no better person to talk to about this than Dr. Kim Lee. So without further ado, welcome Kim Lee to the podcast. Dr. Kim Lee, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ash.
Mate, I'm really, really interested to know your journey about how you became to be a psychiatrist, sorry. So how did you go down that path? Is it something that you always wanted to do? And then how did you get into the gaming aspect as well?
Yeah. Well, I think looking back into my childhood, I actually went to a pretty elite all-boys school here in Adelaide, St. Peter's. Pretty much my parents had to beg them for a discount because they had to remortgage their house to send me there. And so they were betting on me to become something of my life. And I actually got a detention there. Ooh. Because I installed a game called Warcraft 2 on the library catalog computers. And it wasn't even me that got caught. It was one of my buddies that got caught, and he dobbed me and he ratted me. And I never spoke to him again. But obviously I had this sort of fascination with video games back then. I probably got protected from really beginning addicted in high school because back in those days, the local area network, the LAN games were becoming popular. Games like Counter-Strike, StarCraft, multiplayer games were really becoming popular, but my parents couldn't even afford to send me to this school, let alone get me a brand new computer. So I was kind of protected from that whole wave of games. And when I got into medical school eventually, the first thing I learned was what you know now about medical school or medicine is going to be different in 10 years' time. And I always remembered that little nugget. And so here I am. I graduate from medical school, do my internship, become a junior doctor in a voluntary mental health unit in rural New South Wales. I come across a young woman who was actually admitted there for anorexia nervosa. And so she was very low body weight. And I realized that she was actually addicted at that time to a game called World of Warcraft. So very similar franchise to the game that I played as a kid. And this was 2008. So this is a good 10 years after finishing high school. And I'd never played this game because, again, medical school, too busy doing life things. And I also knew that it was very addictive. And so a lot of people stay away from that because it has this reputation of being called World of Warcraft. And even today, I'm treating patients who still play that game, which is amazing. Just shows, you know, how strong that particular brand is and what they did with it. But for a 2008 patient to be female and playing this game was really quite intriguing for me because, you know, all I'd known is that only males, young men played these games. And what I realized was that she was starving her virtual avatar, her virtual self in the game, not replenishing the hit points through eating food. And so this virtual world was mirroring her real world. And for me, that was a mind-blowing sort of experience. And absolutely. I remembered that first lesson from medical school. What you know about medicine now will be different in 10 years' time. And at that point, people were talking about internet addiction. It was becoming sort of a novel type disorder, and more people were losing their jobs or relationships because of games like World of Warcraft. And so that really inspired me to go, okay, I've got to study psychiatry now. This is my calling. If I keep up with it in 10 years' time, it'll actually be recognized as a proper diagnosis. And sure enough, 10 years later to the day, 2018, the World Health Organization goes, yep, this is actually a thing. Let's all work together to try and prevent this and treat it. And so here I am, and here we are talking about it.
Absolutely. That's a really interesting story. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I guess where are we at the moment with gaming addiction? Like I think in the last, for me, I've never really played games. I played the odd FIFA with a few mates when I was younger in the 20s, but never really got into it, which is probably not a bad thing. But where are we at the moment? I know that it is a big issue, but what size of an issue is it? And what is it actually doing to young people's brain?
Where we are at now is that most of the games are either very accessible, like the PCs now, you know, you can play on a Nintendo Switch and get it for $100, download the game for free. And so it's much more accessible than when I was at school. And so more and more people are playing games, and the gaming mechanics are such that there are things called loot boxes. Have you heard of these before?
Loot boxes?
Yeah.
I've heard the terminology, but don't really know too much about it.
Yeah, it's essentially, it turns a video game, any game, including FIFA, into a little mini poker machine. So when you play FIFA, I think you, in the career mode, you collect certain points and use those points to get packs, and those packs might unveil a Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, a really valuable player. And there's a certain level of odds to getting that. And so you can either pay to win to get more chances or play to win to, you got to play longer. And so there's a video that all your listeners should probably watch. Is a video on YouTube called Let's Go Whaling. Okay, so in order for those companies who spend, you know, billions of dollars in making these games, developing them and marketing them, they have to get their money back through whales. So if 99% of people play it for free and the 1% spend, you know, those billions of dollars, it's happy days for that company. And so on YouTube, there's a 20-minute video of a game designer at a games design conference saying, this is the recipe book, guys. If all ethics and morals aside, this is how you hook your players and this is how you make your money back. Okay, so they're talking about things like, you know, 120 days is a sweet spot. If you can get a young player to play for 120 days for free, they know on the 121st day, they're more likely to spend money.
Oh.
And so if your buddies playing FIFA invited you every day for 120 days, you'd just be like, yeah, I'm having some beers, whatever, hanging around with my friends, having a good time. And then you get to this point where you go, actually, I want to get serious about this. Maybe I should get a PlayStation or whatever, get an internet connection, pay for this game, pay to, because I really want that Cristiano Ronaldo. This is the only reason why I'm playing this game. And so there's something called the three H's. So hook, habit, hobby. They hook you with some reward, something that really entices you. Make it a habit, you know, meet up with your friends at a certain time, certain day, for a tournament, And then make it a hobby, so it's part of your lifestyle now. Okay, so that's a pretty typical sort of gamer experience. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, playing daily was never really a thing. It is a thing now. And so in my clinic, in my private clinic and in my public clinic, I'm seeing people with the five H's: hook, habit, hobby, hazard, and harm. So playing to the point where it becomes hazardous to your health, it starts eating into your sleep, you start rocking up to school or work a little bit sleepy or, you know, half awake, you know, dodging birthday parties or whatever to game, or, and, you know, neglecting your partner, all those types of things. And then it gets to the point where it becomes harmful. So, you know, people with serious physical injuries, they stop going to school altogether. They spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars that they don't have on virtual items. And so I see this as a psychiatrist. I'm seeing young people. I'm seeing fully grown men with kids. You know, wives are telling me, I'm telling my husband, choose your family or choose the game. And people with the problem, they choose the game because they have lost their ability to control their gaming time. The games become the priority in their lives. And then they have experienced negative consequences. And so that's where you start seeing those brain changes, right? And so my colleagues from Macquarie University, Mick Moschel and Wayne Warburton, Brad Marshall, all those guys, they're publishing studies where they're following people up and they go, if you don't fix this problem in the teenage years, it's just going to snowball. It gets bigger, their problems get larger, and their ability to control their gaming time gets worse. And so, you know, they're seeing essentially shrinkages of the brain and loss of gray matter and brain power because you're spending your time doing this repetitive thing for a little reward on the other end.
God, that's next level, isn't it? That to get to that stage, I guess that's why, as you mentioned before, we need to manage that during those teenage, or before, well, I guess childhood, really. So what? How? I guess people who listen to this are teachers or parents of mainly young people. So what's some, I guess, strategies or some things that you suggest that could help with that management, or I'm not sure if it's prevention, but maybe that management about screen time and gaming?
Yeah, look, I think it has to be at the policy level in education. I'm seeing parents come to me, like the parents, they're clued in. They know that this is a problem. They see it at home. And when they go to the schools about it, the schools are like, well, I'm sorry, this is in the too hard basket. We don't have a policy about this. And so your son or daughter is in year seven. They must use the school laptop. But there's nothing stopping them. We can monitor what they're doing online, but there's nothing stopping them from downloading a game onto their laptop and gaming in class.
Exactly.
And so parents come to me and they go, we warned the teachers and they did nothing, and they won't even allow us to pay for it to install onto the device because the device belongs to the school. And my intervention is to send an email to the principal and go, hey, I'm a doctor. Listen to me. What can you do? And they're like, yeah, we'll do something about it. But by that time, you know, for some of these kids, you know, they've lost 6 months, they've lost 12 months, they've lost a lot of their education because education hasn't caught up to this as a side effect. So they're all focused about technology, technology, technology. How can we make life easier for the teachers? How can we improve the outcomes for education? But there's nothing to prove that this is actually making teaching better or learning any better. If your child does not know how to read or write, give them a screen. The first thing they're going to do is download a game because you don't need to read or write in a game. It's the kids who are performing really well. Give them a laptop. They will take over the world. They will create the next Uber, the next, you know, Airbnb. You know, they will have the skills to make the most of the technology, but everyone else gets left behind even further.
That's really interesting. And with, I guess, to keep on going down that brain theme, what are some of those, I guess, consequences? I think I've heard you talk about having similar to a mild brain injury. Is that what can happen if we don't break that cycle?
Yeah, look, obviously the brain is growing very rapidly when you're first born. You know, as soon as you come out, your brain is just exponentially growing, developing, learning what it needs to learn to walk, talk, smile, share, laugh, you know. And then the second time in your life is between the ages of 12 and 15. That's when you get a lot of that frontal lobe development, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's when a lot of kids get given a very high-powered PC or laptop. And so the brain needs to develop some core milestones, you know, some pro-social things, how to talk to the opposite sex, how to give a public speech, how to focus and read a page, or how to sit an exam and, you know, all those things, fill out a form. And it's going to be competing. And so, you know, obviously as a psychiatrist, I'm seeing a lot of people present now with ADHD. In today's society, we place a premium on our ability to perform and focus and complete tasks. And if you have ADHD, essentially there's two different types of attention. There's visual attention, which is looking at something, an image, and your brain loves looking at fast moving images, YouTube, TikToks, video games, things that are violent. You know, it excites us and we can focus on those for hours on end. But when it comes to the attention to complete your schoolwork, to sit and listen to your teacher, people with ADHD really suffer and struggle with paying attention for more than a paragraph. And so if you're spending time on a screen for longer than an hour, when you get off, everything seems super slow and boring. And if you have that as a genetic thing, like it runs in your family and you're around screens a lot, that part of your brain, the frontal lobe, is going to be competing with screens, games, and it may not be working to its full potential. We need you to be able to plan ahead, to remember things, to self-regulate. And if it's getting its dopamine fix from games, and it can really rewire that part of the brain. And so there are differences when you put a gamer who's playing professionally in a MRI machine versus a gamer who's addicted to video games. And the South Koreans have done these types of studies where they compare professional StarCraft players to people who are addicted to StarCraft. And they know that there's a little spot in the brain called the anterior cingulate gyrus in your frontal brain. And it lights up differently depending on whether you are playing at an elite level or addicted. Mm-hmm. People who play at an elite level can play strategically and plan ahead, whereas people who are addicted play in a different way. They play in a very compulsive way they can't control and may make a lot of mistakes. That particular study is probably 10, 15 years old now from South Korea, and I'm sure there's been more since then. But what I'm seeing now in my practice is that even now, the pro gamers who are earning tens of thousands of dollars are now struggling with turning and switching off. Like, they too are struggling with their ability to stop gaming. They're just playing to the point of collapse.
So are you worried, like, for society, like the younger generation of society, like
I'm worried for my kids. Even my 3-year-old daughter, she sees her nieces and nephews, my nieces and nephews play Roblox, for example, and she's figured it out, And even myself, I play, for example, a very popular game right now, Pokemon TCG Pocket. That's actually rated M now in Adelaide, in Australia, because it's got loot boxes in it. So when you open up a pack, it's like opening up a Pokemon card pack. You are looking for that rare card. And so, you can be the smartest guy in the room, but still be affected by it. And so, I guess I try not to worry too much about society because I don't know, I can only do so much. But I guess when it comes to what's within my control and within my own circle, I guess I'm definitely sharing some of those fears and worries of the everyday parent.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's so obviously, I mean, obviously you've got a lot of confidentiality, but what are some of those, I guess, if you've got someone coming to you, they're probably at the addiction stage where they do need help coming to you as a psychiatrist. So what are some of those, I guess, strategies? Because I don't think it's not going to happen overnight to, I guess, break an addiction such as gaming. What are some of those strategies that you work with your clients on?
I'm happy to talk about that. That's something that can help people listening. There's a very good documentary from Channel 7. It's called Sunday Spotlight. So it's their little sort of version of 60 Minutes. So last year, they did a documentary hour long on gaming addiction in Australia. And so they interviewed the clinical director of the Fiona Stanley Hospital, which I helped set up. It's a gaming disorder clinic, the only publicly funded one here in Australia. And essentially, Dr. Daniela Vecchio, the director there, was interviewed. And she talks about how she helped a young adult patient who was addicted to their games on their laptop, and they essentially handed in their laptop to her, and she kept it in her filing cabinet. And so they didn't have access to it. So that's a very sort of crude, basic way, out of sight, out of mind. But obviously, there's other processes to it to minimize withdrawal and to help with the uncomfortable, feelings of withdrawal or craving and boredom. Boredom's such a big one. And they also followed up some kids, four families, put them on an island in the Hawkesbury River, and it was run by Professor Wayne Warburton. Excuse me. And so they put four families on an island in the Hawkesbury River with Professor Wayne Warburton and Brad Marshall. And Brad Marshall, the unplugged psychologist, and ran their reset program. And I got invited to help facilitate that. And essentially, it was a very kind of therapeutic approach, offering the parents and the kids psychoeducation and strategies on how to manage it. And essentially, they had to all give up their screens for the weekend. They compared it also to a paramilitary boot camp style camp where you can pay $5,000 to $6,000 to go in the bush, and they essentially, through the veteran mentors, put kids on the right track, and kids very quickly learn about all their privileges and how good they have it. And they come back home and start respecting their parents. And, many people may not agree with it, and their kids may not be suitable for it, but they've got pretty strict selection criteria. But Yeah, it's a very interesting documentary, but the commonality, regardless of what route you go down, is that your brain needs a break from all these screens.
Interesting.
Just a rest.
But if you're I'm just thinking from a parent, because I personally, I don't have kids, but my partner does, and I've seen him in action. And even just the other night, he was it was like Sunday night, and he was on his phone or something like that, and he put on the charger. He goes, "Oh, Mum, can I have your laptop? I've got nothing to do." He's just gone from his phone, put it down for 3 seconds. Now he thinks he's bored. So he wanted another device to, I guess, to get his fix. So with, and I don't think he's got a too bad, I guess, an addiction. I think there's something there, but not probably anywhere near to see someone like you. But how do parents and even, I guess, teachers deal with those students who you reduce screen time, but they're so addicted that they feel they're bored. They can, their behavior just like is totally different. They, I guess, become quite aggressive. They get angry. They tears. How can parents deal with that, or some strategies perhaps?
Yeah, so boredom is a very uncomfortable feeling, but behind all that, the aggression is probably related to some kind of mechanic in the game that is very high stakes.
Mm.
So if you're playing a tournament, you know, your team might be down, they might be relying on you to make a clutch move to win for the team, or you've invested something, either time or effort, or, you know, you're trying to work towards a goal. And if something interrupts that and you're in the middle of that flow experience where time stops and you're just about to peak and then someone pulls a plug, that would just be so frustrating for anyone. It's like, how dare you interrupt me, you know?
Yep.
And so Brad Marshall talks about this sort of high attention, high emotion response, which is the aggression and the meltdowns and the outbursts. And he says, well, you want to set it up so it's a low attention, low emotion response. And he swears by this device called the TP-Link Deco M4, which is essentially a modem attachment, a mesh router, which makes, ironically, the Wi-Fi signal in your house better.
Mm.
But it's the inbuilt software and the hardware that helps parents, because once your modem password is changed so that no one can access it and you feed it through this TP-Link, what you can then do is, from the convenience of your phone, you can then dish out the Wi-Fi signal and program it and outsource the policing to this software. So your partner's son, you know, bedtime might be 10 o'clock. You know that the modem is going to, the internet connection for his phone, his laptop is going to wind up at around 9:30. And so if the agreement is after dinner, you do your chores, you do your homework, you can play, but you know the Wi-Fi, and you've agreed the Wi-Fi is to turn off at 9:30 because you understand that bedtime is 10 o'clock. Then it's up to you and your responsibility to tell your friends, hey, we can start a new game, but just so you know, I'm going to have no connection at 9:30. So, you know, tough luck.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I like that. That's a really good, well, it sounds like a great, I guess, device, or is that a device? So you mentioned agreements then. So is a good strategy to have, whether that's classroom agreements, that's definitely a thing that happened in schools, like not necessarily with gaming, but just those, particularly in primary schools, those classroom agreements of how the classroom will flow, the different, I guess, rules and structures in place. Is that a good thing to discuss at home and also maybe in the classroom around screens, having that agreement in place?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think like any kind of agreement, both parties need to understand the reasons behind it. It's not really an agreement if you kind of force someone to do it without explaining to them. And so there are different ways of approaching things. You've got neglect, which is not to do nothing. You've got authoritarian, which is my way or the highway, or authoritative, which is kind of wiser, you know, caring approach. And so kids are going to respond better and agree to it if the understanding is, and that's why I tell a lot of families, hey, watch this YouTube video, Let's Go Whaling. Once they've watched it, they go, ah, okay. That's why I want to log in every day, because they've planned it that way.
Yeah.
That's why when we go on holidays, I need to take my devices with me or get someone to log in for me when I'm away. And so when everyone's on the same page, then you can go, okay, let's try and beat this together. Let's all agree that sleep is really important because of this, this, and this. And let's agree that having a break from gaming is good because of this, this, and this. And ultimately, we want to protect my brain and make sure that I develop into a fully functioning adult by the time I leave school. And so the detox sort of approach, or giving your brain a rest approach, comes from studies from University of Adelaide and Flinders University, where they got adults who are gamers, who are addicted to their games, to volunteer to give up their passwords to their favorite game on Friday midday. And they didn't get it back till Monday midday. So it was an 84-hour period of a break without access. And they chose the weekend because that's where you're more likely to binge on gaming. And so they found out on follow-up that your negative thoughts, thoughts like I need to game to feel good, my teammates need me, my self-esteem is only good when I'm playing, those kinds of thoughts shift when you have that break. And so, you know, 84 hours is quite a hard sell to most kids. So I really just start off with one weekend day per week and just tell the parents, just fill in that time no matter what you do. Make sure you know what you're going to do at each hour. Otherwise, they're going to go, oh, but I'm bored. There's nothing to do.
Yes.
And so you need to be able to have a comeback for that. And really, the reason why you would involve someone like me is because the parents have lost their sense of authority at home and they need to reset that. And it's my job to reset that and hand it back to the parents.
Interesting.
It's also my job to pick out whether the parents are burnt out and say, hey, are you burnt out? If so, you're not alone. Other parents are also feeling burnt out. Here's what we can do about that.
No, that's really interesting. They're great tips. I really appreciate it, mate. And I think by the sound of that, like, Let's Go Whaling is probably an essential watch for everyone by the sound
must
of
watch.
It.
Must watch.
I'll put that in the show notes. I'll find it on YouTube and put in the show notes for sure as a definitely a must watch. Mate, you know, I just got one thing that came to mind, and this is slightly off track, but is this true? Is there becoming, particularly with young people, you know how you've got those gaming headsets? Are those headsets that go over your head actually causing physical, actually visible dents in young people's skulls at the moment? Is that happening, or have I just heard that?
That might be a new thing, but I wouldn't be surprised. You've got my finger on the video here. There's a little dent there. That's my iPhone dent.
Ah, interesting.
So they've got those ones. They've got PlayStation, thumb, you name it. Like, I've got a severe case of tech neck. Normally when I'm at home, I'm at my standing desk.
Yep.
You know, you do anything long enough, your body is going to get formed into that shape. And so I'm not too surprised if people are wearing headsets, maybe get a looser one, or one that's not a vice for your scalp. But there was a study from Queensland where they did x-rays on the neck, and they did find that there were bony spurs being formed, and they called them, you know, devil's horns, because of the way people were looking at their phone and the amount of sheer weight on their neck. There was a case study from Germany where a man playing a VR headset for 4 hours at a time, he was playing Beat Saber. So it's, you know, waving these sticks, and the weight of the VR headset caused him to have what's called a miner's fracture. So in the olden days, when you were shoveling dirt, people developed this fracture of the neck, I guess, because of the sheer physical force. And that's what happened to this German guy.
Interesting. So, I mean, it's that the brain, but also the physical elements as well that I guess we need to be wary of as well. But just got one more question. So this is more focused on schools. So if schools, I guess, want to reduce the harm of like screen and overuse, what's one concrete wellbeing initiative they should introduce?
This is something that I talk about when I go to schools and talk to students. You know, I get invited to talk to them at the start of the year to give a pep talk, or, you know, year 12 students to get ready for their exams. And really what's going to protect them in the long run is a real life goal that is more meaningful, that is of more value to them than games.
Mm.
If you don't have that, then you're going to get that met in the virtual world. We know through studies from the US, from Princeton University, that young men in their early 20s are studying less, working less, training less, volunteering less compared to 10 years ago, and have increased their gaming time by 60% because these video games are so accessible and they tick all of our psychological needs, our need for a sense of purpose, achievement, connection. All of those things is found at the convenience of your phone, of your Xbox, your PC, and the rewards are immediate. And so I often talk about this idea of, you know, the classic hero's journey, you know, the real world, you know, the world off your couch. It's a big unknown world when you leave school. And it may seem so overwhelming to the average teenager. You know, I can't even believe at the age of 16, I wanted to become a doctor. I knew nothing about the world. But yet again, I had enough support. I had a goal, even though I had no clue what that really involved. I just got told from my parents and teachers.
Mm.
And that's what got me through. Like, that's, you know, what kept me going day after day, back to school, focusing. And without it, kids will meet that need because the games are designed in a way for you to be the hero. You know, you've got this goal to finish the game, to win with your team, and you've got all these challenges. And when you overcome those challenges, you get this reward and this magical item or magical power. And when you come back to the real world, people are like, oh, what? You're a level 100? You know, you're a platinum, you know, whatever. To kids, that means a lot to them, to get this sort of what they call unreal level, where it's like you have to sink in tens of thousands of hours into the game or money.
Mm.
But for the average kid, you know, I want to join the military. I want to become a teacher. I want to, you know, become a nurse or a doctor, or you know, go to space or become the next tech startup. If they don't have that guidance, if they don't have that on their bucket list, you're going to get that in TikTok, you're going to get it in social media, you're going to get it in video games.
Interesting. Yeah, mate, that makes sense. Is there, I guess, have you seen like through your I guess work where young people do play games and then it's a bit of a fad and then they sort of grow out of it? Is that happen, or is it once they play through their teenage years, it keeps on going to like in their 20s? Have you seen that?
Yeah, look, games like Minecraft goes through phases. Obviously, there's a huge uptick now and people are playing it because of nostalgia reasons and the movie. Yep. And so culturally, people can get affected by that. But certainly, game designers don't want you to leave. They don't want you to churn out. They want you to stay. They want you to spend money. They want you to spend time. And so what I'm explaining to kids is, this is like a virtual Disneyland. Okay, if you went to Queensland and bought a ticket to Dreamworld, Movie World, Universal Studios, you buy a ticket for a day, have fun, and then you come back to your real life world.
Yep.
The only people who go there every day are the lowly paid workers, and nothing against, you know, hospitality workers helping you to have a safe, fun ride. But if you're constantly going back into games like Fortnite, Call of Duty, Rust, whatever, Roblox, Minecraft, it becomes more than just a fad. It becomes your life.
Mm.
And so, you know, if it's a fad, okay, great. You've got better things to do. But for those kids who it's no longer a fad, it's now a hobby and a lifestyle, they're the ones that get stuck. And that's roughly 3% of the population. So we're talking about 100,000 kids Australia-wide.
All right. Do you know what? I actually thought it might have been more than that.
Probably.
I've got no idea. I just assumed, but that's interesting. Well, I guess one more, I guess just on that, it's called the Positive Education Podcast. So is there any positives about gaming? I'm sure there is. What are some of those things that, I guess, the benefits of it?
Yeah, look, there are certain studies out there who, will sell you the idea that, this part of gaming is useful, or, if a surgeon plays a video game before surgery, they're less likely to make mistakes. Look, I think there are some really useful lessons to be learned in games, and certainly I approach life much like a video game. I'm doing side quests, you're a side character and a non-playable character that I'm meeting, and I'm going to learn something from you, and you learn something from me. There's that little interaction, then we go along our usual life. And so the lesson that you can get from games is that failure is okay. It's built in. It's an accepted fact that you cannot win every single game. And the more you play, the more you will get better. Your reaction time's better. You learn the patterns. You become more confident. You build and you get into this flow. So flow psychology essentially states that when you are in the zone, that is the optimal human experience. The key is, how do we get kids to experience that in the real world, transfer that across to make it generalizable? That's the million-dollar question.
I guess that's an ongoing, I guess, practice. How do we best do it?
And I sometimes connect to kids on the spectrum, kids who will not speak to me on a Zoom call because that's too overwhelming. But if I say, hey, I've got a Roblox account, add me, let's talk about your game, when we're in their world, they're more likely to open up to me about their anxiety, their mood, how they're going with their family. It's their world. And so it's a very useful way to engage a young person.
Interesting. And mate, I really appreciate the time. And I've just got one more question for you about you do a bit of stand-up comedy. Is there any shows coming up that we can go to?
At the moment, nothing on. I'm writing a new show. Normally, I perform at the Perth and Adelaide Fringes. But at the moment, my show, War and Wellbeing, had a very successful run. Essentially, I've got a corporate version. So if people want to find me, I've got a crowd pleaser account. They can hire me to talk to their school, their workplace, and to talk about happiness from a psychiatrist's point of view and what makes people tick.
Very interesting. I highly recommend people checking that out. So we'll put some links in the show notes as well, so where you can find Kim as well, and reach out to him, because I know that you visit schools. I think people need referrals from a GP to see you. Is that right? Have I got that wrong?
Yeah, exactly right. So if they want to, I mean, they can pay full price and not expect a rebate, but if they want a Medicare rebate, then they can get a referral from their GP, and their GP will see them ongoing. But I'll do the gaming side of things.
And that's right around Australia.
And I forgot to add that there's a strong link between ADHD and gaming. And so a lot of people come to me for ADHD assessments, and then I'm like, "What do you do all day?" "I'm gaming." "Well, hey, did you know that there's a link between ADHD and gaming?" And sure enough, when we treat the underlying ADHD, their gaming time reduces.
Interesting as well. Mate, could talk all day about this, and I really appreciate the time. And I know I learned a heap just then. And I'm sure a lot of people will as well. And as I said, we'll put your links in the show notes. Highly recommend people watching the whaling. What's it? I missed it.
Let's go whaling,
Let's
mate.
go. Right in the front of my mind, I lost it. Let's go whaling, and I'll be watching that myself. I haven't seen that before, and I'll definitely be checking that out. But Dr. Kim Lee, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Ash.